Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, December 4th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. One of the nine Spokane ICE protesters facing federal felony charges takes a plea deal that could keep her out of jail. And Whitman County Planning Commission to ask county commissioners to extend wind farm moratorium in the county until July 7th of next year. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. One of the Spokane Nine facing felony federal conspiracy charges stemming from the June 11th ICE protest in Spokane has taken a plea deal. Mickey Hatfield was charged with conspiracy to impede or injure federal agents and an additional charge of assault on a federal officer. The Spokesman Review reports the federal district court has scheduled change of plea hearings for three more of the Spokane Nine for early next week. They are former city council president Ben Stuckert, Colin Muncy, and Bobby Silva. Five others, Justice Forrell, Aaron Lang, Thalia Ramirez, Bajan Mavalwala II, and Jack Archer, are set to go on trial in May. The FBI arrested all nine in July, about a month after the protests, after the acting U.S. Attorney for Eastern Washington resigned, saying the leadership of the Trump Justice Department was demoting and removing prosecutors that expressed dissent or disagree with Trump Justice Department leadership. Former acting U.S. Attorney for Eastern Washington Richard Barker told the Spokesman Review in September, "I made the difficult decision to leave DOJ because I was concerned about the department's senior leadership in Washington, D.C., staying true to the values that we hold dear, upholding the rule of law without fear or favor. It is deeply troubling when prosecutors who disagree with senior DOJ leadership or express dissent are demoted or removed from the department entirely." In August, Barker wrote on his LinkedIn page he was grateful that while he was acting U.S. attorney, he, quote, "never had to sign an indictment or file a brief that I didn't believe in," unquote. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, then appointed Trump supporter and former right-wing candidate for Washington Attorney General Pete Serrano of the Tri-Cities as acting U.S. attorney, and he approved the July indictments against the Spokane Nine. Under Hatfield's plea agreement, she would not be jailed or serve probation if she complies with release conditions until June 2027. After 18 months, she will have the option to withdraw the felony plea and instead plead guilty to a misdemeanor charge of depredation of U.S. property. If Hatfield violates release conditions, she could go to prison for a maximum of 6 years and a $250,000 fine. Under the agreement, Hatfield will also have to pay a portion of the $10,900 in restitution, which would be spread among those convicted. Contacted by phone today, the father of one of the Spokane Nine, Bajan Mavalwala Sr., told KRFP his son will not be accepting a plea deal because he is innocent. Mavalwala also commented on how early federal prosecutors offered the plea deals, saying in negotiations they usually wait longer to ramp up the pressure. He said it might be an indication that the prosecution is desperate. Mavalwala also said Bondi's appointment of Serrano as acting U.S. attorney this summer was probably illegal, noting the dismissal of charges against New York Attorney General Letitia James and former FBI Director James Comey last week on the grounds Bondi had improperly appointed top federal prosecutor for Eastern Virginia Lindsey Halligan, who prosecuted the case. Halligan's predecessor, Eric Siebert, had resigned among fears the Trump administration would force him out for refusing to charge Letitia James with financial crimes. Today, federal grand jurors declined to indict New York Attorney General Letitia James. The Whitman County Planning Commission is asking for more time to review potential wind farm regulations in the county. The Planning Commission board took up most of last night's meeting to decide if they should request county commissioners extend a temporary moratorium on the construction of new wind turbine electricity generators, which is set to expire, as well as preparing for the upcoming public hearing on the proposed changes to the county's wind energy code. There are two chances for the public to weigh in on wind turbine policy coming up. The first chance is for people to submit focused written comments no later than Thursday, December 11th at 5 p.m. to the Planning Commission. A second opportunity will take place at a Planning Commission public hearing set for Wednesday, December 17th at the Whitman County Public Service Building. Following the hearing, the Planning Commission is expected to send the potential changes to the ordinance to the Whitman County Commissioners for a decision in January, which is 1 year since commissioners approved the current moratorium, which halted new conditional use permits on developing new wind turbines in the county. The Daily News reports the Planning Commission wants county commissioners to prolong the current moratorium on the new wind turbines for another 6 months so they consider how wind turbines could affect neighbors of construction projects, including growers who use aerial application of pesticides and herbicides. They also want to consider viewshed issues and decommissioning language and bonding. This year's moratorium came after Oregon-based Steelhead Americas announced a plan to build the Harvest Hills Wind Project, which would include 45 new wind turbines along State Route 272 south of Colfax. Soon after the announcement, a Whitman County group called Save the Palouse told county commissioners they were concerned the project is too close to Kamiak Butte, and they were concerned about the project's effects on farming. Save the Palouse had gathered 3,000 signatures calling for a pause on the project so the Planning Commission could update county code on wind energy generators. The current code has remained largely untouched since the county created it in 2009. Since February 2025, county officials have been going through zoning ordinances which govern wind generating facilities. They will consider the planning board's request to extend the moratorium until July 7th. The Center for Biological Diversity has initiated a plan to sue the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service over a lack of wolf recovery plans. The group alleges the Wildlife Service is in violation of the Endangered Species Act. Other conservation groups are preparing to sue the federal government to protect the endangered status of gray wolves nationally. According to the Daily Montanan, the Center for Biological Diversity sent a letter to U.S. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Brian Nesvik alleging the agency violated the Endangered Species Act by not preparing a recovery plan for gray wolves. Center for Biological Diversity Senior Attorney Colette Adams wrote in the letter, "The Fish and Wildlife Service has made numerous premature efforts to reduce or remove federal protections for wolves under the Endangered Species Act, which the courts have nearly universally rejected. The only successful delisting effort was in the northern Rocky Mountains, where Congress, through a rider to an appropriations bill, directed the Fish and Wildlife Service to remove wolf protections in Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana. Since then, the center and its allies have submitted petitions to relist wolves in the northern Rockies and across the West, which the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has denied. In August of last year, the U.S. District Court for Montana ruled the Fish and Wildlife Service unlawfully denied the petitions and remanded to the Fish and Wildlife Service a new analysis. According to the report, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced they would not release a national wolf recovery plan despite a previous announcement that the agency was working on the plan. The suit comes as some members of Congress are targeting wolves. They have proposed various measures to remove the species from the endangered species list. The Center for Biological Diversity's letter says the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has a piecemeal approach to recovery efforts, which has prevented a nationwide recovery for gray wolves. And you're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report.
New legislation from members of Montana's congressional delegation aims to make environmental restoration projects easier and less expensive. Montana Congressman Troy Downing and Senator Steve Daines are sponsoring the Floodplain Enhancement and Recovery Act. It would exempt floodway restoration from federal floodplain permit reviews. David Brooks with Montana Trout Unlimited cites a farmer who lives along Trout Creek near Helena. He wanted to shore up about 100 feet of steep riverbank and plant willow trees to stop erosion. Brooks says the whole project would have cost about $1,000, but the permitting costs were far higher.
Because it's in a mapped floodplain and had to go through floodplain permitting review, the estimated cost for that modeling and review was $10,000 to $15,000, and so the landowner could not afford to do it.
Under current policy, any proposed project in a regulated floodplain must prove it won't cause any rise of flood elevations. It's designed to protect people and property, but it has created significant hurdles for small restoration projects. Brooks says this bipartisan legislation is a common-sense solution and would allow a certified engineer to sign off on low-risk projects, verifying they won't jeopardize infrastructure. Brandon Parsons is with American Rivers, a group focused on clean rivers and water. He says it's essential to regulate development in floodways, but the current rules weren't intended for ecosystem restoration. He stresses the bill distinguishes these projects from other forms of development, so communities have more options to safely advance their work.
Currently, restoration projects are being viewed the exact same as developing homes or buildings in the floodway.
Parsons says over the past 100 years, the U.S. has lost about 90% of its natural floodplains, and widespread efforts are underway to bring them back, underscoring the importance of simplifying permit reviews. Brooks jokes that the trout support this bill and says the legislation deals with work that's already happening. He adds that regulators deny few, if any, of these proposals.
We're just having to pay a bunch of money to get it done, and it delays projects. So it's not as if the work that is being permitted is regularly being denied and has negative impacts.
The House and Senate versions of the bill are awaiting committee hearings. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Unga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Unga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
A movement to recognize the importance of vision care as a means to fight poverty is growing in Oregon and across the world. About 93,000 students across the state go to school every day without the glasses they need to be able to participate fully. Matt Giannino with Good Vision USA explains that if a child's vision problem goes unaddressed, their academic performance quickly begins to decline, leading to fewer job opportunities.
They're less likely to attend school. They're less likely to complete school. On average, students with a vision impairment that go unaddressed lose between 2 and 4 months of learning every year.
Almost 1 billion people worldwide need glasses but cannot afford them, what Giannino calls the planet's greatest unmet disability. His organization has already treated 1 million patients across 11 countries. He stresses that vision care is a high-impact opportunity, with research showing a $28 return for every dollar invested. Anne Hollister is with Vision to Learn, a nonprofit that provides vision care and glasses to kids at schools in low-income communities. She says upwards of 95% 10% of the kids who need glasses don't have them, adding that many kids and parents simply don't realize their children are not able to see well.
The first time we give a child glasses, they so often say the same thing. They put them on, they take them off for a second, and they put them back on, and they tell us they didn't know the tree had leaves.
Hollister notes that even with Medicaid covering vision care in Oregon, it remains inaccessible for many. Working parents often have to miss work for multiple appointments to get their children screened and fitted for glasses. Since launching in Portland in 2023, Vision to Learn has provided glasses to around 4,200 kids and plans to expand across the state. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
The Washington State Patrol said an injury car accident totally blocked a portion of U.S. Highway 195, 3 miles south of Colfax, yesterday evening. A Washington State Patrol news release said officials dispatched a life flight helicopter to the scene of a two-vehicle collision on U.S. Highway 195 around 5:30 p.m. Wednesday. State Patrol officials said they will provide updated information on the status of the injured people and the investigation as it becomes available. Someone chopped down and stole a decorated Christmas tree from a Moscow residence Tuesday night. Police are investigating the incident and searching for the culprit. According to the Daily News, Moscow police have opened an investigation into the case, trying to find the responsible person who cut down the 12-foot spruce tree from the yard of a home in the 1400 block of Sunnyside Avenue. Moscow Police Captain David Hathaway said the tree was likely taken around midnight Tuesday night. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there is an 90% chance of rain tonight, mainly before midnight. Snow level 4,000 feet, rising to 4,500 feet after midnight. Low 32, up to a quarter inch of rain possible. 100% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly after 7 a.m. Snow level 5,000 feet, rising to 7,000 feet in the afternoon. High 44. Southeast winds 5 to 10, becoming west 10 to 15 in the afternoon. Gusts up to 30, up to a quarter inch of rain possible. On Friday night, 90% chance of rain, snow level 5,500 feet, lowering to 4,400 feet after midnight, low 38, windy, west winds 25, gusts up to 35. And on Saturday, 70% chance of rain, snow level 4,100 feet, mostly cloudy, high 43, west winds 20 to 25 with gusts up to 40 miles per hour. Current temperature is 34 degrees. Coming up next, Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And that'll be followed by Appearing Locally, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow-Pullman area in the near future. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow-Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.